Hi, I'm your host, Rowan Tonkin, and welcome to Being Planful, the show for FP&A leaders and planning experts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Being Planful podcast. I'm your host, Rowan Tonkin, and I'm really pleased to be joined today by Ben Murray, the founder of the SaaS CFO. Ben, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Rowan. Thanks for having me.
Well, we were chatting pre-show about, obviously the SaaS industry itself. So going through some interesting times right now, but there's kind of a weird dichotomy to the SaaS industry. Number one is the beauty of its simplicity, but then the complexity of some of the nuance, but also the complexity in how do you scale a SaaS business and how do you grow through that rapid change, which is typically what SaaS businesses are looking to do. And obviously the bigger they get, the more profitable they get and more attractive they are for investors. And so I'd really love to talk deep dive on that. And for everyone's benefit, Ben has been a financial analyst, FP&A lead and multi-time CFO himself, and runs the SaaS CFO podcast. And obviously, Ben, you're a fractional CFO, is that correct?
Correct, yep.
Correct. So for those businesses that may be listening and need some fractional advice, obviously reach out to Ben. And I personally use a lot of the metrics and benchmark reports that that Ben and team produce. So thank you for that. All right. Well, let's get started, Ben. So let's talk about the kind of the simplicity. So the simplicity of SaaS is the key metrics. And you know, as investors look at SaaS businesses, they generally are generally looking at the same set of benchmarks. Can you describe what they are and why they're important?
Yeah, I mean, with SaaS businesses now, it comes down to the health of the recurring revenue. So how do we dive into that to understand the stickiness of the revenue streams? And like you said, SaaS businesses, both simple and complex, right? We've got recurring revenue, we've got a bunch of headcount, but so many of the strategic decisions we have to make to grow the business. And in SaaS, you know, for my clients, and when you just operate your business and maybe you're looking to raise money or you're looking to exit, they're definitely a standard set of metrics that everyone wants to see. And I have a 5-pillar SaaS metrics framework that I use, that I teach in my course, that I use with my SaaS clients. And the first pillar is about growth. You know, where is your growth coming from? Is it new customers? Is it expansion customers? Is it both? The second pillar is retention. So looking at gross revenue retention, net revenue retention, logo retention. And the next pillar is margins. You know, so how's our overall gross margin? How are our margins by revenue stream? And that's, Rowan, where you say things are becoming more complex. So many different pricing models, revenue streams. We've got PLG, SLG, and how that affects our margins. And then we have our financial profile, things like the Rule of 40, our OPEX profile, EBITDA, and then finally our go-to-market efficiency metrics. So CAC, CAC payback, LTV to CAC, cost of ARR, and so on, magic number. And looking at those metrics in whole to understand the performance of our business, and those, you know, metrics are the ones that investors are going to want to look at as well.
I really love how you break that down into those five pillars. So for those that are listening that have never been in a SaaS business or understand, you know, Ben threw out a lot of 3-letter acronyms there that you'll probably never have heard of. We won't go into all of those, but you can Google or ChatGPT them now, I guess is probably a verb, and they'll tell you what each of those metrics mean. But one thing you know about SaaS, even though it's a 4-letter acronym, we have a lot of 3-letter acronyms throughout the business. So yeah. Ben, as we're talking about these key metrics, right? So let's put ourselves in the shoes of someone who's probably, you know, mid-level experience in a SaaS business. What is the core functions of an FP&A team in terms of getting all of those metrics understood and shared across their business partner and the organizations that they support?
Right there, you know, especially for a SaaS business, their core reports and core reports to FP&A, of course, we have our standard variance reports, actual to budget, or maybe actual forecast that are really important to understand the health. Where did we make? Where did we miss? Why are we on plan, off plan? That's just core to that FP&A process. And then from there, we go into our forecasting cycle. And then, of course, creating metrics. There's, like you said, so many metrics for SaaS businesses. And, you know, it's hard to know where to start sometimes. And that's why I created that framework so you could progress through your metrics. So the right metrics at the right stage, you may not calculate go-to-market efficiency metrics if you're 50K in MRR, but if you're 10 million ARR, for sure you should be calculating these. You know, so I think beyond the standard FP&A core kind of reporting framework is then diving into those metrics. And then depending on how big of the business you are, do we just need one CAC payback period, for example, or do we need one by product line, or do we need one by our ideal customer profile? So there's an evolution that we go first, the accounting foundation, creating the SaaS P&L, putting forecasts in place, and then finally calculating metrics, and then seeing how deep we have to go with those metrics.
Yeah, I think the important thing for FP&A teams, one of the things you just mentioned there was like the maturity model of a SaaS business. And something that, you know, I see as being a leader of SaaS businesses is you'll get someone that has operated at one level of maturity and they might jump either backwards or forwards or across the kind of maturity curve. And them really struggling to understand how different the goals of those key metrics are and the nuance of those key metrics. Can you talk about how important that is for both the CFO and FP&A teams in terms of advising the business on where they are at in those maturity levels? Because it really does change the way you work within the company and operate the company itself.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's the right metrics at the right stage. Are you early on? Are you startup? Are you embedded FP&A in a business unit of a very large global organization? You know, and what resources do you have available? What technology are you using? What data? So it really just depends. Now, my framework can apply to both situations, but you know, we want to make data-driven decisions, and that's the point of these metrics: is to understand, where are we investing? Where should we invest? Are these investments producing any ROI in our business? And then, of course, the great thing about SaaS is there are a lot of benchmarks. So we can see how we're performing against our peers, especially in the B2B world, to see if we're on track. If we're not on track, does it make sense that we're not on track? Or is that part of our three-year plan to get to a certain financial profile? So there's so much that goes on. But first, it's always, let's just calculate it. Let's not make it perfect. Let's just calculate. And then we iterate over time and really refine those metrics so we can use them in that monthly financial process to make better decisions.
Yeah, 100%. I think the other element that I wanted to talk to you about there was you talked about benchmarking. And so the benchmarks that SaaS businesses typically see are a lot of S1 filings, of course. Obviously, there's a lot of bankers that share their perspectives with all, you know, both the early stage founders and as you mentioned earlier, those looking to exit or do transactions. And those bankers are looking for you to hit these magic numbers, right? And there's even one called the magic number. So talk about how important it is for finance teams to A, understand stage and maturity and therefore where they should be at according to those benchmarks. And how should you think about, you know, be like living in that world of being constantly benchmarked to peer sets?
Yeah, because of course you see a lot of those public SaaS comps and public SaaS metrics, but a lot of us don't live in those in large public companies. And you know, we're in the private SaaS world and we need benchmarks that are applicable to where we're operating, because benchmarks, we can't just use generic benchmarks. So there's a bunch of great data sets out there, but we can't just use a benchmark that, you know, is taken from a, you know, a $200 million company and a $1 million company. I like to benchmark my clients by ACV size, because go-to-market motion really kind of dictates, you know, the infrastructure we're building out, you know, how much we're investing in certain areas. You know, so it's not just one benchmark, but it's got to be the right benchmark that is applicable to our business so we can understand how we're operating. And then also, especially if you're going to fundraise or if you're going to exit, you're going to sell your company, you need to understand just how you look compared to the universe out there.
And what are the typical benchmarks that investors are looking for? You know, let's use your your model, right, by ACV. So let's say I'm a 25K ACV, software company, probably signing, at that level, you're probably hopefully signing 500 to 1,000 customers a year, right?
Yeah, so that's important. So if you're, say, 25K ACV versus someone who has a $10 a month price point, right? Different benchmarks that we're going to look at. Maybe you're going after B2B. These others have a mix of, SMB to maybe B2C customers, so that's going to vary. So those investors are going to, you really have to look at those and benchmark your business differently because there are different expectations. Yeah. If you're selling 25K ACV versus 100K a month product, different expectations, different benchmarks. So of course, investors looking at the health of your recurring revenue. So how does your gross revenue retention stack up, your net revenue retention? I've talked to some investors where looking at acquisitions where if you can't calculate your retention number, they won't even talk to you. They'll just like come back when you have that number. And then when you do have that number, then they have minimums. Some I've talked to, their thresholds are 90%, say for gross revenue retention. If you're not there, they're not going to invest. They're not going to acquire. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so important to look at these. And of course, your overall financial profile, how's your revenue growth, what's your gross profit, how are your margins by revenue stream, what's your OPEX profile like, are you positive EBITDA, negative EBITDA? So again, with metrics, we want to look at everything in context versus just really isolating one metric and trying to determine the overall performance of a SaaS business with just one metric.
Yeah, unfortunately, there is no one single number, right? Many people might think, we talked about rule of 40 earlier. You mentioned that being one of the kind of more, important, SaaS profile metrics. Do you want to explain rule of 40 to the listeners?
Sure. Yeah. Rule of 40 is the trade-off between profit and growth. So we're going to take your growth percentage plus your current profit percentage, and hopefully that sums up to over 40, and you're deemed quote unquote attractive by investors if that number is over 40. Public SaaS companies, you tend to see the revenue growth plus your free cash flow margin. For private SaaS, it tends to be growth percentage plus your EBITDA margin to determine that number. And of course, as the CFO, I said, financial discipline never goes out of style. And of course, rule of 40 was a little bit out of style in the past couple of years. But now, of course, everybody looking at cash runway, sustainability, and now rule of 40 has come back into fashion and back into vogue, that people are looking at this metric. And again, there are a lot of inputs that go into whether you're rule of 40 or not, a lot of things that go in, but it's a good, I think, overall metric to look at, and just understanding the balance, those investments that you're making in your business, what's that expectation? Is it going to produce revenue growth down the road? Is it going to produce efficiency? So as a CFO, I think it helps with that financial discipline process.
Yeah, it's one of those, I'm not sure if it was out of vogue. It was okay to have a negative profit, right? As long as you had crazy growth numbers, the negative profit side was okay. But obviously profitability has taken a big swing. Is there any insight you can provide into what has happened there in terms of, if we think about 12 months ago, maybe even as long as, it's probably not six, but definitely 9 months ago, profitability wasn't the king of SaaS businesses. And as we sit here today, obviously it is far more important. I wouldn't say maybe it is king. I'll let you answer that question. But can you talk about that major shift that has happened for SaaS businesses over the last 9 months?
Yeah, of course, right? We know before the public value, the valuation crash with SaaS companies, right? We had low interest rate environment, a lot of cash out there. I wouldn't say easy, but just a lot of capital available to invest in businesses and to continue to invest. Of course, that changed, valuations went down, interest rates run up. And now it's a little bit harder. Maybe the hurdle rate is higher. Now with PE buyouts, that debt market is influencing and having a factor on what they're looking at and what they want to look at. So it's just has really ratcheted up as far as, one, how we're operating the business more for sustainability between rounds. And then also just in the valuation environment, just the expectations are higher. You can still get nice multiples, but just the expectations are higher for all those metrics that we talked about.
Yeah, you've really got to be, almost best in class across many of those key pillars to get anywhere close to a valuation that you might have got 18, 24 months ago. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. It's just harder. It's the same thing though. It's like companies can, if you have a nice profile, you can still get funded. It's not like nothing is happening. And if you're trying to sell your company, you can still sell at nice valuation levels. It's just the expectations are higher. It has to be a little bit more best in class across the board. And of course, not everything has to be perfect. But yeah, it's the standards are definitely higher.
Right. Let's shift course a little bit from kind of key metrics and benchmarks to talk about how to scale a finance function within a SaaS business. As we said, it's pretty easy to go and find all the key metrics, and but as you go through that rapid growth that SaaS businesses are historically known for, how should CFOs and FP&A leaders, accounting leaders, controllers think about those stages of growth and think about how to continuously manage their finance function? Because, I see this all the time. I'm in the marketing department. We're the first people to get budget cut, but we're the first to get reinvested in, frankly. And that's because of the belief that we can create more value. But historically in SaaS businesses, G&A has tried to keep as kind of a lower threshold as we possibly can. So it's historically felt like in SaaS businesses, the finance teams are always overworked, under-resourced, and always playing catch up on the growth. So is it even possible to get ahead of this challenge?
Well, it's a constant cycle. I think you're never at that utopia as far as technology, process, data, et cetera. And, if you're early stage, you're just building out the basics, right? Going from cash basis to accrual, to putting revenue management in place, proper invoicing, sales tax compliance that you go through in the early stage startups. If you're more mature, then it's that first FP&A hire. Or you hire the CFO and then eventually you hire, they're doing the FP&A, and then you hire an FP&A analyst. Now they're doing it. And then beyond that, then you have the bigger organizations where you have corporate FP&A, and maybe you're embedded, not embedded in business units, departments to help them out, where it's a different thing. Now I see cycles where it's, all right, we put in technology, we're improving the finance function, we're going up and to the right, and then we kind of plateau. Right. Then we're kind of static. But then it's, how do we push to that next step? Is it now replacing technology? How are departments and business units changing? And really, I look at what are the executives, the people we're supporting as an FP&A person, what data do they need to drive the business forward, which then dictates how I want to set up my processes, how I want to set up my technology, my reporting, not necessarily me dictating to them, this is how you view it, but how do they view it? And that then helps me shape my finance organization so I can be that good business partner.
Speaking of business partners, I want to just kind of mention a little thesis that I have, which is that the recent rise of revenue operations in the last kind of 3 to 4 years has occurred generally because of the underinvestment in G&A. And so larger go-to-market organizations like sales and marketing, and oftentimes at a bigger organization, customer success, frankly, couldn't get the information that you just described, right? Like the business couldn't get it from FP&A. So they went and created this like pseudo shadow FP&A team called Revenue Ops. And now they have all of the tools and technology to almost get their own data. What are you seeing in terms of, in this current environment, it feels like that's being kind of clawed back a little bit by the office of the CFO. Can you talk about that challenge at all?
Well, definitely. I mean, where I spend a lot of my time is with sales and marketing, right? There's so much investment, so much going on there, so much data in the sales and marketing areas that you spend most of your time there as a CFO, I think, at least in my experience. And yeah, if you don't have FP&A, then they're trying to do it themselves, trying to use technology, figure out, have some reporting, some metrics. But I've been tasked with that as a CFO, because then it's almost overwhelming sales and marketing. There's so much data. Maybe the data is not clean. And it's like, hey, Ben, use your FP&A bench strength here and help them out. Start looking at the data. Make sure we're using it the right way. And of course, you get into the bigger organizations where then you'll have sales FP&A analysts just dedicated to that marketing and sales arm. Because it just, again, like any SaaS business, there's a lot of data in there. And then in the sales and marketing, you have so much data trap there that you can use that then FP&A definitely getting involved if you have the resources for that.
And so how do SaaS businesses think about that data hierarchy, if you will, to your point, right? Like you've got all of the key SaaS metrics that you talked about under the key pillars, and they're all driven by many different layers of metrics. And what's important to me as a CMO is probably very different to what's important to my chief customer officer versus my chief revenue or chief sales officer. How does finance go and think about what do they need to gather and prioritize ultimately in terms of starting to either claw back some of that from revenue operations or really just build the foundation from scratch?
Yeah, I think CFOs really have to be stewards of the data and the technology within SaaS businesses. And maybe we're not making that decision, but we need to be involved. Because think about the quote to cash process. You know, the data coming into our CRM system and then eventually comes to accounting, to invoice, to RevRec, to collect that cash. And now the data is so intertwined that I need to be involved. Say if my CMO wants to replace the CRM or do something different with the CRM, you know, or put some quoting process in place, all that data is flowing downstream eventually to finance. So I need to know, I need to be involved. And maybe I'm not telling them, hey, this is the CRM system you should select, but I, a CFO should definitely be involved in that process because it's just, all the data is so connected and customer success for renewals and retention and the data they will want from our existing contracts. You know, so understanding again the data that they're needing, but a lot of that stuff does flow back down to finance.
And what, I've kind of been taught everything flows back to finance, right? there's not much data in a business that kind of never really hits finance in a, you know, primary, secondary, or tertiary way in the end. And so that's a big challenge, of course, for a CFO or FP&A lead to manage. As you think about the kind of FP&A teams, how do you see them prioritizing, for example, how important the quote to cash process is, and then on the, you know, on the accounting side, the whole procure to pay process obviously goes through a major maturity curve as well. What prioritization should leaders, you know, finance leaders, put on those processes as they grow?
Yeah, I think it really, again, it depends on the stage of your business and what are those priorities? What are you trying to build out, right? Are you trying to build out your FP&A function for the first time and we need tech there, we need skills, or, you know, we're at that point now, we want to improve that quote to cash process. So I think there are different pain points and priorities depending on the situation of the business, the size of the business. Is it the first time? Or are we doing a rip and replace? But all those, you know, that's why it becomes so complex for CFOs because, yeah, I've got to understand quote to cash. I've got to understand how I procure, approve bills, pay bills. You know, it's so sometimes it's just, you know, resources do become spread thin and what's the biggest fire and also aligning those priorities to maybe our corporate objectives. You know, maybe that kind of dictates, you know, where the CFO, well, should it dictate where the CFO is spending his or her time.
Yeah, of course, the CEO needs to dictate the drivers of, you know, a lot of SaaS businesses use the OKR methodology or V2MOM. They're all very similar, right? Setting out those stage-based goals quarter over quarter, year over year. And, you know, one thing that you mentioned is kind of the technology aspect, right? Do we need to invest in people? Do we need to invest in technology? Certainly something that I feel is happening right now and I've seen this in, you know, MarTech and then sales tech and now in office of CFO tech. Feels like we're at this almost golden age right now is something that we've used here at Planful of CFO technology where it is being far more prioritized than it ever has before. What do you think the key driver of that is right now for CFOs and FP&A leads that are making those technology investments that they probably were pushing off, you know, 3-4 years ago?
Well, there's so much more technology available to finance and accounting. Of course, right, MarTech went through its whole revolution, tons of solutions out there for marketing and sales. And now, and that kind of was why I created my SaaS tech stack report, because people are asking what tech are people using in SaaS companies? And I've been doing this for 4 years now, first solely focused on finance and accounting. And it's just exploded how much is available. New accounting solutions coming to play, FP&A tools, sales tax, close management software, sales commission compensation management. So, you know, the focus has maybe shifted more to the back office a little, and it's just exploding. And now there's so much technology available. And I say, you know, CFOs, just like the development team has their product roadmap, CFOs need their own product roadmap because there's so many choices now. And every year the categories expand in my tech stack report. One, you know, solutions that are just focused on finance and accounting, but also just solutions that overlap immensely with finance and accounting, like a CRM system and that data flowing into accounting. You know, so that integration is so important. So it's just, there's so much tech available now in the back office and finance and accounting, and we can't just, you know, we've got to do a little bit more research now.
Yeah. That, that maturity, and not only the maturity curve that we've talked about, you know, you also need to align that maturity curve with your technology curve and the people that you need to look for and the competencies that they have. Of course, if you go and look out for talent, I certainly feel this on the marketing side, I could go and buy a technology. If my team don't know how to use it, overcoming that can take 6, 9, 12 months. And I'm sure that's the same with CFO tech. As much as vendors like us would say, but ours is easy to adopt, easy to learn, the speed that you can get is really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, that's, of course, always a bonus if someone on your staff has experience with that technology, and, you know, huge bonus, but maybe that's not going to sway my decision for some things. But yeah, it's just right. And that's where things have changed this year, where now people paring back their tech stack on new software, let's cut it. And now we need a little faster ROI. You know, I think the expectations are we can't just invest something and we see the benefits 2 years from now if we're going to spend more on the tech stack.
Yeah, time to value is important. Mm-hmm. And the value realization timeframe has almost gone from, we can wait to see this value 9, 12 months from now. It's, you know, by week 4 or week 6 of the implementation, you have to realize real benefits. Otherwise, the investment isn't coming.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, all those FP&A teams who went through the pandemic really exposed weaknesses in process and data and technology. Now we're doing scenario planning, tons of forecasts, what if scenarios. And that, I'm sure, was a hugely painful process for some who just didn't have that infrastructure in place, or there are a lot of lessons learned. Now we're going to put that in place so we're ready, so we can move faster if we need to move faster with the company.
Yeah, hopefully no more black swan events coming anytime soon. But what we have seen for sure is that change is more constant, faster than ever, and doesn't seem to be slowing down. So if you identified those gaps during a black swan event, time to find the resiliency and create resiliency is now, I would certainly say. So Ben, I know we're coming up to time here. How can people find more about what we talked about? For example, your five pillars of SaaS businesses, any of the benchmark reports, and also your tech stack evolution.
Yeah, definitely. I've got a lot of resources out on my website at thesasscfo.com, thesasscfo.com. My templates, my forecast models, a lot of in-depth posts on SaaS metrics and finance. I partner with Ray Reich at RevOps Squared, who's producing, I think, one of the largest B2B SaaS metrics data sets out there. That's a great resource for B2B SaaS benchmarks. And then I have my academy at thesasscademy.com, where I've got a lot of content on, again, SaaS metrics, SaaS finance. So a lot of resources out there.
Great. Well, you're going with the resource-led growth model, so I like that one. and how can people contact you?
Yeah, they can either, my email's ben@thesasscfo.com. So feel free to email me or contact me through my blog or connect with me on LinkedIn. Happy to talk shop.
Awesome. Well, Ben, really appreciate the time and the SaaS CFO knowledge drop today. It was certainly insightful for me and I'm sure to many listeners. Thanks for joining us here on the Being Planful podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
Make sure you hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for stopping by.